Ready to get down to business? Join seasoned entrepreneur, community leader, and Army veteran Scott Shalom Klein, who will take you behind the scenes with those who work in America's small business scene and speak with leaders making an impact, creating jobs, and telling their story in entrepreneurship.
So let's get down to business.
On AM 560, The Answer, here's your host, Shalom Klein.
And indeed, we are all about small business jobs and entrepreneurship and business. We talk a lot about business here. You're on with Get Down to Business. And I'm here, Shalom Klein. Remember, you can always download podcasts on my website at syklein.com. And while you're there, don't forget to follow me on Twitter at Shalom Klein. It's going to be a jam-packed week of content and information you will not want to miss. Honestly, super excited for today's conversation. Really, really timely as we move into the new year. I'm thrilled to be joined by Jones Laughlin, who has made it his life's work to deliver powerful ideas and practical solutions to individuals and organizations struggling with too much to do. He is the author of a fantastic read. It's called Juggling Elephants, which I know we are going to talk about, and his innovative solutions on leadership, overload, change, and time management has attracted the attention of organizations around the world, including Federal Express, Walmart, Choice Hotels, Toyota, and the list goes on and on. Jones, welcome to the program. Thank you so much for joining us.
Well, thank you. My energy level is going up already because of the number of words you're using, Scott. This is exciting to be able to talk with you today, especially for your audience of being small business people who definitely are juggling elephants.
Absolutely, juggling elephants. So let's dive right in over there as we go. We'll learn more about your background. But title, Juggling Elephants, I was giggling when I first saw the book. But how did you come up with that title for a book about work-life balance?
Sure. I've got to probably take a step back to get to the title and the whole genesis of the book, Juggling Elephants. I was working with my friend of mine, Todd Musig, one day, and we were just having that conversation that we all have. And I said, you know, Jones, sometimes I just feel like, that I'm not doing my best at work. I'm like, yeah, we all kind of struggle with that. And he says, yeah, sometimes I feel like I'm not taking care of my family. I'm not being a good spouse, not being a good dad. I'm like, yeah, we all struggle with that. And he says, you know, sometimes I just have no time for myself. And I'm like, yeah, we all struggle with that. And then he just said, in a moment, he said, am I just supposed to run around like my life's some kind of circus? I'm like, what did you just say? He said, like a circus. I'm like, what would it look like if you were to think about your work and life like a circus? And we went inside and started drawing, not on a napkin, but on an 8.5 by 11 sheet of paper about what that would look like. And one of the things we talked about is what is an act you would not see in the circus could be that because it would be impossible to perform. And we came up with this idea of juggling elephants. Because you can't do it, but it's what it feels like when we're trying to work to get everything done, both at work and in our relationships and for ourselves.
Absolutely. And we all have those moments, that sense of overload, again, between our personal lives. This time of year, everybody has so many things going on. And work-wise, I mean, hopefully everybody's on that growth trajectory. And it can be overwhelming, especially as an entrepreneur. So let's dive into it. What are the biggest reasons we all feel with that constant sense of overload in our lives?
Yeah. I'm going to start with the very foundational idea of the idea that we can get it all done. That's impossible. We have physical, mental, emotional, financial limits, especially if you're an entrepreneur. And sometimes we just think that we don't have to plan for our time as effectively because we don't even think about the fact, okay, I'm limited in what I have today. And so how am I going to use that time to get my best return on investment? And so I think that's one of the starting points is we have to say that I can't get it all done. So what are the most important things I can do? I think the second thing is thinking about, you know, what are the outcomes you want from this day, this week? We talk about in the book about being the ringmaster of your circus, recognizing that you don't have control of everything, but you do have opportunity to influence impact more than anything else or anyone else in your work and life. And are you being the ringmaster of your circus? Are you taking the opportunity to plan your day to say, okay, yeah, there's an hour of discretionary time that I could use for a longer term activity, because if not, then you just spend your day just taking the bright, shiny object or the squeaky wheel or whatever's right in front of you. And you don't think longer term about what should I be focusing my time on.
Absolutely. I'm chatting with Jones Laughlin, who's a speaker, author, and coach, especially, again, this new read, Juggling Elephants. We've been chatting about the story of that. But Jones, one of the things I know that you are fond of saying is that the problem is not time management, it's choice management. What do you mean by that?
Sure. Charlie Gielke wrote a great book, or has written several great books, but one of the things he talks about is how that schedules can be managed, energy can be managed, but time cannot be managed. Time can only be accounted for. So it's a lag measure. I say it's about our choices, because the choices we make every day are the things that lead us closer to accomplishing our goals or further away. Give you a perfect example. People wake up in the morning. They make the choice, many people do, to open up social media or check their messages or email or something. You immediately are allowing people who do not understand your goals. They aren't necessarily in line with your values. You're allowing all those people to speak into your thoughts about how you want your day to look, versus making the choice to say, yeah, you know, what are some of the goals I'm working on right now? What is important to me? What are my priorities? And then beginning to plan your day from that perspective versus comparing yourself to thousands of other people who don't have your same goals or priorities in mind.
Absolutely. And I want to talk directly to the entrepreneurs and fellow business owners that are joining the program today. Especially when you're starting a business, there is just too much to do, not enough time. And so when somebody comes to you, Jones, and they are looking for coaching, for mentoring, and they're just saying, Jones, I've got these goals. I know exactly what I want to do, but I'm struggling. There's too much and something's going to drop. What do you say to them?
Yeah. You said something very interesting there at the end, Scott. You said, you know, something's going to drop. And so sometimes I'll ask him, well, what would that be? And would that be so bad? And so I think identifying what it is you need to drop sometimes. In fact, I have a strategy that I use with my when I'm coaching someone and I find them in that situation, like you just said, is it's called, let's find you a tad more time, TAD. The T stands for transfer. What is something you're currently doing that could be transferred to someone else? What is something they could do all or a piece of? And I'm not just talking about work stuff. I'm talking about stuff around your home or stuff in other ways that you say that would open up some space for me. The second one is automate. One of the things that we find with entrepreneurs is they just get so busy working on things that they get out of a rhythm or a cadence. And, you know, what do you need to automate? For some people, what they need to automate is exercise, okay? First thing in the morning or after I finish this or something. They need to set up some type of schedule so they're not having to make so many decisions during the day. I know this happens at this time. The third one is D, that's drop. What is something you need to stop doing? What's something you need to drop from your schedule that would open up some space? And oftentimes I find that people can identify something that, yeah, if I would drop that, that would give me 15 minutes a day. I'm like, okay, great. How can you better use that 15 minutes a day that you were using scrolling on social media or socializing more than probably was necessary? And they can identify it, but then it's got to be scheduled. Going back to that whole idea of creating the lineup, they've got to figure out where they're going to put it in their day. And starting small is the key. You heard me say 15 minutes. I think all of us can find 15 minutes in our day that we could use more effectively.
Absolutely. And you are clearly very comfortable with this format for this program. And again, managing to get some really strong points. And I know everybody's going to have some really key takeaways. So Jones, I want to talk about you because you are a role model in, again, choice management and in juggling elephants, as we've said so far. So what are some of the things that you're working on right now? What are some of the goals that you've prioritized, especially call it a New Year's resolution in the year to come?
Sure, absolutely. One of the things for me is I need to continue to get better with my routines and my habits. I need to automate more. That's one of my goals for the new year, is automating more, whether it's writing, whether it's developing new content, whatever it is. I just need to get better at automation because I'm still making too many decisions analog, we might say. The second thing where I'm working on, it's a bigger project. I am working on a book about focus. So many of my clients, so many of the people in my keynote programs, they just can't focus. They're working on something one minute, then they're choosing to work on something the next minute. And so I am currently working on a book about focus that uses the wisdom of a beekeeper to help them understand how to focus. So I'm excited about that project. Hope to have that book ready by end of 2024.
Oh, I can't wait to bring you back on again, chatting with Jones Laughlin. Really, really exciting conversation. The book is called Juggling Elephants, and I know there's going to be a lot more to come. But Jones, how can we get in touch with you, and where can we find a copy of this great read?
Absolutely. First of all, copies of Juggling Elephants are available anywhere you buy books, especially online. So wherever that is, you can get those there. Certainly someone could contact my office if they want some for their organization, signed copies, those kinds of things. My website is joneslaughlin.com. I'd love for people to come connect with me there. I also have an opportunity for people to sign up for a monthly resource with tips and ideas on managing the struggle of too much to do. Finally, I do put out a lot of content on LinkedIn. I love my network of folks that I get to work with on their challenges. So connect with me on LinkedIn at Jones Laughlin.
Jones, thank you so much for joining us. We'll be back in just a moment. Be sure to check out our sponsors, Tom and Rabali from healthplanchicago.com, or give them a call, 630-863-3477. Again, a quick break, but we'll be right back. Well, we know that learning to be a good leader doesn't involve formulas or abstractions. It can, however, be edified through examining tangible illustrations of leaders and leadership from history, which is exactly what my next guest is all about. Moshe Temkin is Distinguished Visiting Professor of Leadership and History at Schwarzman College. He's a fellow at Harvard University's Belfer Center for Science and International Affairs. He's taught at Harvard, Columbia, and has been a visiting professor and lecturer in India, South Korea, Spain, Mexico, France, and the United States. I'm absolutely thrilled to once again be joined by Moshe Temkin as we talk about examples throughout history where we can learn. So Moshe, welcome to the program. Thanks so much for joining us.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Absolutely. I know you have a new book out. It's called Warriors, Rebels, and Saints, The Art of Leadership. Looking forward to talking all about that book. But let's talk about your background for just a moment. When did you get interested and passionate about this topic?
Well, I was teaching for several years at Harvard University at the Kennedy School of Government, and I had students from all walks of life who were interested in various aspects of leadership and public policy. And I'm a historian, so my task was to make history relevant, to make history something that was important, impactful for these kinds of people. So I started teaching on leaders and leadership in history. And the cases that I developed kind of took on lives of their own, as it were. And after a few years of teaching this course, it dawned on me and some people close to me, the opinion I trust, that it could be actually geared to a wider public because there seemed to be a lot of interest in these cases. And so that's how the idea for the book came along, right? So the idea for this book, Warriors, Rebels, and Saints, is really to take that classroom experience and to turn it outward to the broader public so that anybody who reads the book can get a sense of what, how to learn from history about leadership.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So I'm going to ask the simple question, especially for the entrepreneurs, small business owners tuning into this program. Again, the book is called Warriors, Rebels, and Saints. But why is it important for readers to know about leaders and leadership in the past? How is that relevant for people today?
Oh, because the past is never dead. The past is with us all the time. The past is what shaped the world we live in. We can't understand the world we live in, whether we're thinking about the political world, the business world, international affairs, what have you, without understanding the forces that shape the world and how change happens over time. And we also know that it's really leaders who are the ones who are driving that change. So it's really important, I think, for anyone who wants to do well in this fast changing world to understand where leaders come from, right? What kind of crises and what kind of moments and what kind of circumstances create these leaders, where they emerge from. And then once we have leaders, what do they do, right? How do they change history? So that's what led me to kind of pose the question that's at the heart of this book, which is, do leaders make history or does history make the leaders? And I've had many students over the years from the business world, from the private sector. And they, they don't need me to teach them how to do well at business. They don't need me to teach them how to, succeed in business. But I think they can learn a lot about leadership, and they can transpose from these historical cases onto their own world, onto their own professional challenges.
Absolutely. So that's a perfect segue. What are some of the most important things, the most critical things, realizing that we are a program, as we say, we get down to business, that you think that leaders of today and tomorrow, especially some of those students, can learn from the leaders of yesterday?
Yeah, I think there, it's interesting. The question of history comes up a lot. I think there are things that we have in this world that are timeless, that are universal. You pointed out when you introduced me very nicely that I teach in different places in the world. And while every place I teach is different, if you take India, you take the United States, you take Mexico, these are very different countries, very different problems, very different histories. But some problems and some challenges are universal. I think all leaders want to have a better society around them. They want people to succeed. They want their children to do better than they are doing. They want a better future for everybody. So I think that some of these issues have come up in history. Leaders in the past have faced all kinds of crises from which we can learn today, because it's not that history repeats itself, but history is really the best laboratory we have to see what kind of leadership in the past succeeded, what didn't succeed, right? And then we can evaluate what is different and similar from situations in the past compared to situations that we might face now.
Absolutely. And leadership is something we speak about frequently on this program. We talk about leaders, we talk about leadership. So Mashiq, you are a student of leadership, a student of history. So why are leaders important in moments of crisis? And what leaders do people choose in such moments?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I think one of the observations that I saw as I was, learning this originally as a student and then later as a professor, is that there are leaders who are more adapted to times of stability, peace. And then there are leaders that we are better served by, let's put it that way, in times of crisis. So just to give one quick example, I think, the Great Depression that hit the United States in 1929 and lasted throughout the 1930s up to World War II, was really a moment where you could compare a leader. We had President Herbert Hoover, who was extremely admired and popular when he got elected. And he was an excellent leader for a moment of stability, a moment of peace. But when crisis hit and the Depression hit, Herbert Hoover turned out to be, in a way, the wrong man at the wrong job at the wrong time. Whereas his successor, President Roosevelt, was an excellent crisis leader. He really handled the crisis in a very dynamic way, in a way that made him extremely popular to the public. They elected him 4 times, right? We all know that. And we don't know how Roosevelt would have done in a moment of stability. He might not have been such a memorable or transformative leader. So I think in a moment of crisis, we're looking for leaders who can help us. We're looking for leaders who can propose things, who are very dynamic, and especially we look for leaders who address the problem in an honest, transparent, and realistic way. Because I think ultimately leadership is about trust. It's about honesty. It's about truth telling. And it's about leveling with people.
I'm chatting with the author of a new read. It's called Warriors, Rebels, and Saints, published just about a month ago and written by our guest, Mashiq Temkin. I'm really enjoying this conversation about leaders, leadership, and history. You've already answered the question, Mashiq, about, again, does history actually repeat itself? But I'm curious, why did you choose the leaders that were selected in your book? What do they have in common?
That's an excellent question. I think the leaders are coming. They come from very different times. They come from different places in the world. There are different types of leaders with different kinds of challenges. But I think what they all have in common is that these are leaders or situations of leadership that really are crisis situations, conflict situations. I'm drawn very much to moments in which there seems to be often very little hope, sometimes no hope at all. Even situations when, you know, you have to find ways to lead under tyranny, or when you are in an economic crisis, or when your very survival is at stake, or when you are fighting for very basic rights and freedom that people have had to do. And so I'm really interested in how leaders deal with those pressure situations, with those crisis situations. And I think if you kind of look through the gallery of leaders that are in the book, and the list is long and I won't go through it here, you'll find that they have that in common. These are leaders who were facing very difficult challenges, but I have to say that they're not always successful, right? I think some of the leaders in the book are success stories, as it were, and some of them maybe not. And I think it's very important for everyone to learn not just from successes, but also from failures, because we don't just want to identify leadership with success. We really want to understand what are the conditions for success and what might be conditions for failure or disappointment.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I've been chatting with Moshe Temkin. Moshe, it's a great read, and I want to make sure our listeners can get in touch with you and find a copy of the book. How can they do that?
Well, they can get on my website, moshetemkin.com, where you have contact information, you have my email, and I'd actually love to hear from people who want to engage with the book, who read the book, have their thoughts. It's very important for me to stay in touch with readers and really anybody who has questions, so I welcome that.
Well, we'll make sure to link in the show notes as well. Thanks so much for joining us. A quick break on Get Down to Business. We'll be right back. Hey, welcome back to Get Down to Business. Such a timely conversation we are about to have over here. I'm thrilled to be joined by Peter Voss, who is the pioneer in AI who coined the term artificial general intelligence. Peter, I know you are the current CEO and chief scientist at I want to make sure I don't butcher the pronunciation, but it's AIGO.AI, and you are a leader in the space. Peter Voss, welcome to the program.
Yes, thank you. It's IGO.AI.
IGO. Okay, perfect. IGO.AI. Perfect. I appreciate it. I didn't want to butcher that because, I mean, I'm just a good example of how little people know about what is rapidly becoming a literally industry changing in virtually every single industry, and that's artificial intelligence. So, Peter, I want to start by getting to know you. When did you become interested in artificial intelligence and develop your expertise in this space?
Oh, about 25 years ago. Prior to that, I was actually an electronics engineer. Then I started I fell in love with software, started my own software company, accounting ERP software package. That company was quite successful. We grew to 400 people and did an IPO. It's when I exited that company, it occurred to me, how can we make software smarter? How can we give software intelligence? And so I embarked on a journey of studying intelligence, all different aspects of intelligence, how children learn, what makes our intelligence special, you know, compared to animal intelligence or other, and what do IQ tests measure, all of the, you know, really deep understanding of AI. And I've just been passionate about achieving what we call AGI, basically machines that can think, learn, and learn and reason the way humans do.
Absolutely. And one of the most important things that you've been involved in is this conversational AI, because you believe that hyper-personalization is the future of customer service and AI is making that possible. So, you know, Peter, as we have this conversation at the end of 2023, I know AI is definitely a part of our lives and it's changing things on so many levels. So what are some of the trends that you would want our listeners to follow in the world of artificial intelligence?
Right. Very, very good question, because a year ago, ChatGPT was launched, and it's really been revolutionary. I mean, everybody's talking about it. Everybody's trying to see how they can use it. Now, the quick takeaway is it's not ready for prime time for customer-facing things, and it's really not going to be able to do that because it makes a lot of mistakes. And, you know, your legal department isn't going to sign off on something that can just make a big blunder. And it's inherent in the technology. So the technology is fantastic for brainstorming, for getting ideas, getting information that it's been trained on. I mean, it's just been trained on basically everything that's on the internet. So there is a lot of knowledge there, but it's good, bad, and ugly. And it really requires a human in the loop to kind of make sense of it and say, oh, well, does this actually make sense? Or maybe I should double check it or something. So companies who believe that they can use this ChatGPT technology for customer-facing service, I think I'm making a big mistake. You really need a different approach that is auditable, that's reliable. And, you know, that's what we are offering. It's called a cognitive AI as opposed to generative AI. So generative AI makes up stuff, you know, from this massive amount of knowledge that it has, whereas cognitive AI reasons about things, and it has limited knowledge, but the knowledge is solid, you know, so it can give customer service.
Absolutely. I'm chatting with Peter Voss, serial entrepreneur, engineer, inventor, and a pioneer in artificial intelligence. He is on a mission to provide a highly intelligent and hyper-personalized assistant for everyone. And Peter, I mean, as we have this conversation with entrepreneurs that don't frankly have a large budget, what are some of the things that you think that is maybe not even ready for prime time, but some of the things that you think that folks can utilize where it stands right now? I know that's that you are leading in this space.
Yeah. So where generative AI can be very good in helping to, you know, create copy, logos, and things like that to help you brainstorm, to get information. So for all of those things, I think definitely everybody should become familiar what the technology can do. Now, on the other hand, if you want to automate call centers, I mean, call centers are always a pain point, you know, for anybody who has one, and hiring people, training and retaining them. This is where our kind of solution really comes to the fore, where we can provide this hyper-personalized service where it gets to know each individual user, you know, what they buy from you and, you know, what their priorities are and so on. So they're two different realms. You know, the one is for brainstorming, creating copy and so on, and the other one is for, you know, replacing call center agents or helping to reduce that pain point in a company.
Absolutely. Peter, I really enjoyed this conversation. I could talk to you for hours about something that's really important. And I imagine that if we have this conversation a few months, there's going to be so many developments and innovation between now and then. And I will definitely make a point of bringing you back on real soon. But Peter, how can we get in touch with you if we want to learn more about the important work of you and your fascinating team?
Yes, absolutely. Well, simplest is you can contact me at peter@igor.ai, A-I-G-O.ai. Also the website, I'm on, you know, I'm on Twitter and LinkedIn as well. So I welcome any, you know, anybody contacting me. I also have a number of articles that are published on medium.com.
Fantastic. Igor.ai, we'll link in the show notes. But Peter Voss, thanks so much for joining us. Quick break. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Get Down to Business, the show all about small business, jobs, and entrepreneurship. Got a treat in store for you. I'm thrilled to be joined by Malcolm Peace, who is the founder of Tatera Growth Partners, a company specializing in acquiring family-owned small businesses with established Texas legacies. Unlike traditional private equity firms and business brokers, Tatera takes a long-term approach, which we're going to talk all about. Malcolm certainly has a unique perspective as a first-generation American with South African ancestry, coupled with his passion for business and civic engagement. And absolutely thrilled to have Malcolm Peace on the program. Thanks so much for joining us.
Oh, it's a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. So I always love to get to know the person behind the microphone. Malcolm, already alluded to, you've got an interesting perspective, but who are you and why are you so passionate about business?
Yeah, I love small business. I think small business has an ability to employ people in a way that maybe larger corporate companies can. Just they have different incentives. And when you're able to control the outcome in a private small business in the way that you take care of your employees, that is bar to none compared to the rest of the economy and things of that nature. So I think that that's the unique position that we get to have. And I like playing in a space that I can roll up my sleeves and make some, you know, practical improvements to. To see kind of long-term success.
Yeah, absolutely. And obviously, our listeners can't see you, but you're a relatively young guy over here. And I'm curious, what was your first business venture? I know you have quite a bit of experience for a young fella, and you've been a coach, a consultant, and certainly you have a unique perspective, which is equipping small firms with a lot of tools. But where did you get started?
Yeah, candidly, I played college tennis, and so tennis has always kind of been, athletics has always been in my background. So if you really go way back, first lessons as a tennis coach when I was like 13, 14 years old, to probably a girlfriend or a family friend that was willing to sit there and do that with me. But yeah, that was kind of the beginnings of I could go earn my own dollars, was a, you know, kind of unique perspective. And I obviously had friends that did other things, you know, ran the lawn care business or whatever the case may be. But being able to say, here's a set of skills that I have and I can go apply that and make good money on it. I was super excited to do that. So that was the beginnings of kind of the entrepreneurship, and obviously watched my parents. They have an entrepreneurship background as well. So I watched them and kind of made it my own through tennis.
Absolutely. And we're going to pick your brain on a lot of advice for fellow small business owners and entrepreneurs that are tuning in over here. But I also want to understand a lot more about Cetera and the Texas small business landscape. But lastly, just on your personal background, I know your Southern African ancestry is really important to you. How does that mold or shape some of your business ideas and decisions?
Yeah, great question. So family immigrated from South Africa in 1990. I was born a few months later. So that ages me for everybody listening. But that to be said, you know, my family had been there for many, many generations for a multitude of reasons, on my mom's side and my dad's side throughout Southern Africa, ranging from Mozambique, Zimbabwe, and then moving down into South Africa eventually before moving to the States. And so with that, there's been entrepreneurship. And on my mom's side, particularly, my great grandfather owned about 50,000, 70,000 acres of land for cattle and dairy, and employed hundreds of people and made a great product for the community, and just had a beacon of employment and quality, you know, within the local area. So all that to be said, Cetera really meant to embody that, where we do business right, where we partner with the local community, like the government there, to be able to retain jobs and increase jobs, all that kind of stuff. We often get grants for land opportunities and things of that nature. But also at the same while, take care of people inside the house too, from the employee side of things, because I really do believe these small businesses are built on these key employees that ultimately, you know, spend many, many years, decades often, of their life invested into these companies.
Absolutely. I'm chatting with Malcolm Peace again, the founder of Cetera Growth Partners. Really, really interesting background. So Malcolm, everything's bigger in Texas, but you're certainly proud of that small business landscape in that great state of Texas. So why Texas, and why is that so important for you?
Yeah, candidly, I know the landscape, I know the laws, I know the tax implications of working and operating within the state, and I don't know it from any other state. So that was the practical first part. But then it becomes an idea of, you want to be known. When you're competing in this space to get first kind of position engaging with these small business owners, you want to be hyper-focused on what you're communicating to them, because it is going to be their largest asset that they probably ever transition in their life. And so as a result, it can be very overwhelming for them to be bombarded with lots of information. And so we try to keep it very hyper-focused of, here's how we concentrate, here's our game plan, here's what we do, and we're not intending on buying anything way outside the state or across the world or whatever the case may be. We're here to play in the backyard, and I understand this backyard very well.
Absolutely. So who are you working with at Cetera? What kind of companies are reaching out to you, and how do you and your team help them?
Yeah, so it starts back again. We went from a crawling to a walking phase, and I think we're getting close to that running phase in our development. But it comes through a journey personally, as I kind of went from, you know, like I said, I had a tennis background, played in college tennis, and then kind of had some coaching years after that, and then went to grad school and kind of made this transition into small business and investments and running and operating small businesses. And in that time, there was a stint where I was working for a larger private equity group where we were doing cybersecurity and defense contracting companies. And in that time, I will never forget sitting in Las Vegas at a convention, kind of early 3.0, Web 3.0, and also you know, cryptocurrencies and things like that, and felt like a total fish out of water. And so I think for anybody, you know, that's going through a phase of kind of honing in on their niche, it's sometimes just a series of events that take place. And so that was in a really pivotal one for me, where I realized, man, I'm not going to fit into this space. So let me go work on rather kind of white, rather than white collar type businesses, let's go work on blue collar industrial type businesses. And I had a lot of exposure in that kind of in other, engagements that I had and partnerships that I had where we were working with a lot of blue collar type folks. And I think that one of the things that I'm uniquely positioned to do is be able to distill down kind of professionalization of business to a, you know, an audience that maybe doesn't get that as much.
Absolutely. Again, chatting with Malcolm Peace. We're going to squeeze in a very quick break here on Get Down to Business, the show all about small business, jobs, and entrepreneurship. Get on my website, syklein.com. Be sure to subscribe, rate, review, and share on your favorite podcast app. But again, don't touch that dial. We'll be right back. Hey, we're back on Get Down to Business, continuing our conversation with a fascinating small business owner or entrepreneur, again, first generation American with Southern African ancestry, combined with a strong passion for business and civic engagement. That's Malcolm Peace. He's the founder of Cetera Growth Partners. Malcolm, welcome back. Thanks again for joining us. We've been chatting about your firm, again, called Cetera. And you practice what you preach, my friend. I know you are in the process of scaling your own firm. You mentioned that you're in the process of sort of moving into that run phase, which is great. So what are your big New Year's resolutions and growth plans for 2024?
Yeah, you know, I think one of the challenges with any business, you know, those that we engage with, we purchase, or those that we go through the process of due diligence with, or just interact with in general, businesses are always capped based on the capacity of the owner if they build a business like that. And what I mean by that is if the business owner is in the middle, like we like to call a centralized business, everything flows through the owner, they're the control, they make the decisions, they have all the regulation on everything happening, that business will only grow to the capacity of that owner. And consequently, although we work on that outside in the portfolio companies, developing systems that are not dependent on an owner. In our firm, we did not do that early on. And so we are changing that going into 2024. Originally, it was me coming in as the operator for the first 6 months, and then I would replace myself with an operator. But that is an inefficient process to scale. So we are bringing, like you said, taking what we preach to what we do within our portfolio companies and bringing it in-house a little bit more to the firm side. And so we're rolling out our Generalist Vice President program where we are hiring people to be in-house for a period of time before they go be a part of our businesses that we operate.
Amazing, amazing. Congratulations on all that success. So we are a practical show, a show that provides homework assignments, if you will, to our listeners. We love to give people, again, the actions, the advice, the information that they need to be successful as well. So Malcolm, you've been sharing a lot about your own success. What advice would you have for a fellow entrepreneur that may be tuning in?
Yeah, so we focus on businesses that are doing $3 to $12 million in revenue exclusively in Texas. So I think this advice can go just about anywhere. If you're in that phase or you're cresting into that phase or you aspire to be in that phase, building a business that has systems that are not centered around you, figuring out how many things, what we like to call our $10 tasks, that you can hand off to other people that are not worth your time that you continuously do. And we create a simple T-chart. Left-hand side, you write down all the tasks. You write down on the right-hand side if they're actually revenue generating or they have some sort of upside, real upside potential with that task that you do. And if it doesn't, it needs to be off that list within 30 days. And we exclusively put that down to get our team thinking in a different form or fashion that they may have not had in the past.
Absolutely. And what perhaps mistakes would you recommend that folks avoid? I know it hasn't been all rainbows and butterflies for you and your team at Cetera, and certainly you are in the weeds with many of your portfolio companies that you're involved with. So what's some of the common mistakes that you'd recommend our listeners maybe steer clear from?
Yeah, as you're in that scaling phase or you're kind of cresting that maybe that seven-figure mark or whatever the case may be, you're going to start adding really, really important people to build that out. And what ends up happening is this subtle dynamic shift of leverage for that employee. So that employee becomes the business becomes heavily dependent on that employee. And then what you end up not doing is documenting. So you're always in this tug of war where you're having to increase pay or increase kind of the leverage that they get to have. And the business owner loses that leverage. And as a result is the business gets put into a position where it's actually highly risky because that employee may or may not be able to stay for a long period of time. And so what we do is we address where are those key risk points? What is that key thing that allows our business to thrive and do well? And we start de-risking that with standard operating procedure documentation to be able to eliminate some of that risk.
Absolutely. Malcolm, really enjoyed this conversation, learned a lot, and I know our listeners will as well. And in fact, I know that they'll want to get in touch with you and your team at Cetera Growth Partners. How can they do that?
Yeah, you can find us on cetera.com, T-S-E-T-E-R-A TSERRA. I'm on LinkedIn, Twitter, and other places. Malcolm Peace, you're more than welcome to reach out to me. Happy to chat with anybody. We're always looking for operators that want to run businesses in Texas, and we'd love to engage with business owners that are looking for somebody to buy their business and hold on to it for a long time.
Awesome. Malcolm Peace, thanks so much for joining us. Happy holidays to you, your team, your family. Looking forward to having you back on in the new year. That's a wrap for us here on the show. What small business jobs and entrepreneurship? Get on my website, sykline.com. To success, let's get down to business. We'll see you next Sunday right here at M560, The Answer.